Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 7 for the week of Wednesday, the 7th, January 2009. Welcome back
to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Jester.
And I'm George Albor.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a website we created to focus on serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. Mm-hmm. And this week for our inaugural 2009 podcast.
Woo! Welcome to 2009!
We are going to talk about a little story that we recently read, and it's about Pixel Junk Eden, one of my favorite games of 2008 that I played. It's a downloadable game off of the PlayStation Network. You could play on your PS3. And they were talking about patching it to change some of the difficulty that people were having with it. People were having difficulty getting past... Well, basically, you know, if you don't know what Pixel Junk is, the best way to learn about it is just to YouTube it, because it's really hard to describe.
Yeah, visually, it's exactly what you see. I mean, it's a little, like, silk thing.
Yeah.
Spinning around.
Basically, it's a two-dimensional platformer that is basically vertical rather than horizontal, and you're swinging around like a little insect collecting pollen and collecting other things throughout this garden that you're swinging around in. And people were having a lot of problems with some of the later gardens. Personally, I'm still stuck on the 8th out of 10th garden. It gets incredibly hard.
You said that was the one with the gimmick where, like, things are locked down?
Yeah, so basically in the garden, you're also timed when you're trying to collect these things. And I ran up into a situation where I have to activate a certain number of switches to open up the path, the way forward. Except, you know, you're fighting against the clock and you're fighting against gravity, which is, you know, trying to fling you down to the bottom of the level again. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a Prince of Persia-esque puzzle where you have to hit the switches in the right order to advance. And so it's just a lot of pressure when you're trying to play this game. But anyway, I really liked it. But evidently, people are having a lot of problems with it. And the developers are saying that in a couple weeks, they're going to release a patch to... And some of the things that they were talking about was possibly making the levels easier. And I'm assuming that's just messing with the placement of items throughout the levels. That's how I would think you'd do it.
I think they mentioned also the things that give you more time, giving you a larger chunk of time.
Exactly. Yeah. Which would be a big change because, you know, the mechanic of getting more time is one of the biggest barriers, I think, for people who are playing it because they feel pressured when they're doing it. Like, if you make a mistake, you're not just wasting your time, you're wasting the in-game time, and it'll kick you out of the garden if you, you know, if you expend it all.
I mean, although it's kind of the point, right? I mean,
yeah, it is. You know, so I think it's a major change to the game. And so it started me and George thinking about patching games and how we feel about it, you know, because really they're making a retroactive change to the game that could actually be have a big impact on how we play it and how future people play it. So here's my first thing that I think about. If I can race through this game and beat it, all 10 gardens before it's patched, and then let's say you play it after it's patched.
Yeah.
Am I like Elite Hacksaw compared to you because, you know, you had to play it on the easy mode and I played it through like the hardcore mode?
Right. I don't know. Probably. And the weird thing too is you can't really decide. It'll download the patch regardless.
That's how all the other PS3 patches work. You know,
if that's the case and you really like playing games that are very difficult.
Yeah.
This could be pretty irritating.
Yeah. I think they should give you a choice. You know, if they're going to put something on that really changes the rules of the game,
yeah,
then does that mean my other thing is, does that mean it's a new game?
Only in the sense that it's a new game when anyone else plays the game for the first time. Uh-huh. We all approach games differently. We all have different experiences and skills when we're playing it. Mm-hmm. So someone who's not very good at Pixel Junk, mm-hmm. when they're playing the game, their experience, even though you're playing the same game, is much different than yours because you have all of the conventions and foreknowledge about what it takes to accomplish the goals in Pixel Junk. Uh-huh. If the game that they're playing is significantly harder just because of, you know, their personal lack of skill, because they're total noobs, then, you know, I guess you could say that they're playing different games, but that's not something that you can fix, right?
But I mean, if the rules are different, then there's not even a possibility of you playing the same game. You know what I'm saying? Like what if let's translate it to a different game. Like what game was really frustrating at certain parts? Like, was there anything in Fable that was, you know, that was difficult. Kind of difficult?
Not
at all.
Not in game okay, difficulty. About, no, about, there was a lot
Mirror's
of frustrating.
Edge? How about Mirror's Edge? So what if they patched Mirror's Edge and gave Faith like a dart gun or a
tranquilizer,
yeah, or a trank gun or a very small caliber pistol that yeah. she was adept at using rather than the rifles and stuff.
Well, that's a little bit different because you don't have to use it. I mean, same with the guns in Mirror's Edge. You don't have to use the Mirror's Edge. You don't have to use the weapons. You could put them down.
But I'm saying, what if they changed it to make a gun a viable option? Like, the guns are really not very accurate, very hard to handle. What if they gave Faith a gun that she liked using? That's a different game then, right?
That would be an entirely different game, yeah.
And so my point is, if you change Pixel Junk to give the crystals give you back more time so you can complete the garden and stuff, that's a different game to me. You know, because you're changing the rules of the game rather than just, you know, starting people off in a different location or,
right.
or doing something else.
Well, but the hope is you're making a better game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look at something like Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Valve updates their games pretty regularly. And Left 4 Dead, although Left 4 Dead, I'm sure
Left 4 Dead
DLC
will,
as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But Team Fortress 2 has gotten updates that are pretty dramatic. When they focus on one character and give those characters, you know, secondary weapons if you've earned certain achievements,
uh-huh.
like they recently released a patch for Team Fortress 2 that gave engineers the ability to rank up the things that they built. And you started seeing a lot of people playing as engineers, and what it means to play as an engineer changes pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a completely different game, of course, because they put in time and effort to balance that addition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still dramatic, and it's something that is fantastic because they're making, you know, a better game. It is a different game, but it's a better version of the game that's already there.
And I think the difference between the Team Fortress 2 example and the Pixel Junk example is that it's building on existing rules.
Yeah.
Rather than change, like, I don't play Team Fortress 2, but have they ever done something where they'll change the amount of damage a gun gives?
They changed, so for example, the recent patch did some big difference, and this is something that you see a lot in MMOs.
Yeah.
Where someone cries nerfed.
Yeah.
You know, someone's like, oh, they got totally nerfed. For example, on Team Fortress 2, the demo man who uses sticky weapons, sticky bombs, that he can explode when they want, they added the ability for those bombs to be destroyed by any weapon that fires a bullet. So that's new.
Okay.
And that dramatically changes the ability of the demo man, because mm-hmm. all of a sudden, anyone in the game can get rid of your weapons.
Yeah. And that wouldn't have been the case with someone playing Team Fortress 2 when it first came out.
Absolutely not.
So it is kind of a different game for the newcomers that are...
Yeah, I mean, it's especially different for the people who really like Demo Man. Mm-hmm. And you see the same thing in World of Warcraft when they bring out a new patch for certain classes. They'll change classes dramatically.
Or just a brand new class.
Yeah, because that throws things in the mix, right?
Yeah, exactly.
With Death Knight coming in, which is a really fun class to play, and I think it's pretty balanced so far... it's a good fit,
mm-hmm.
but there's been a lot of other patches where they'll change things only slightly, you know, they'll change the mana regeneration of someone
mm-hmm.
so that they can cast spells longer. And all of a sudden people will start crying, you know, that they're nerfed.
And it'll be most apparent to the people that have played it for the longest.
That's just something that happens. You know, when you add a new addition, you're making a big old splash into a game that already exists.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. I was listening to a Penny Arcade podcast and, I forget which game they were talking about, but they were saying that the game was going to get panned because people won't play the game. They'll play the game with the expectation of the game they want to play.
Yeah.
Or they'll play the game with the game they want in mind rather than the game that they're playing in mind.
Uh-huh.
So that might just be a thing where, you know, it's expectations are different and it's not necessarily bad. It's just, you know, not met.
But the patch thing is interesting because those expectations were built by playing the game that was already there.
That's why patches kind of freak me out.
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking about a bit earlier, there's a fear from a lot of people that the recent trend of downloadable content and patches that are released after the game is released is going to make developers release games that are essentially unfinished.
Yeah.
They're going to release things that are really kind of crappy.
Yeah.
And then say, it's cool, we'll fix it later.
Yeah.
And you see that, kind of. I mean, SOCON 2 was fucking terrible when I played it at my brother's house.
Yeah. And now, and after it's
still fucking
it
terrible. But,
you know. But the patch had nothing to do with that.
No, but I mean,
you brought up earlier before we started recording, you brought up Fable 2's multiplayer.
Yeah.
Clearly that should have shipped with the game.
And it did eventually ship with the game. But it
should have shipped on day one.
As far as I know,
because of a patch, they were able to...
Right, but they patched it in before day one.
Yeah.
So as far as I understand, it wasn't on the disc.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And there was a legitimate concern, and when it was sent to early copies for reviews,
yeah.
Peter Molyneux had a letter in there that said, you know, please forgive us, we didn't put in multiplayer. It's kind of dumb.
Well, that's just, I think that speaks to the business of trying to push a product out on a certain date during a certain time frame, you know?
Right. But, and again, it goes back to whether or not these patches are a good and crucial addition to the game. You're already going to get people pushing titles like we talked about last mm-hmm. week. No matter what, if there's going to be like a holiday season where people buy up games in ridiculously high numbers,
yeah.
you're going to get publishers releasing these games earlier and earlier. So
regardless of whether they're done or not. And so you might as well have a patch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For example, if we... we could not download a patch for Fable 2.
Yeah.
It's very likely that it would have been released without multiplayer anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would have been a better idea because multiplayer fucking sucked in Fable 2. But regardless, uh-huh. it's better that we have that patch come out, you uh-huh. know? The problem is whether or not people are going to be, you know, I don't know.
I guess for me, it's about whether they use it as a crutch a little bit too liberally. Like when Little Big Planet first came out, there was no way to effectively search the community levels.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of had to browse around and hop around through the world until you found something that you liked. Now, finally, you know, a month or so later, maybe it was almost 2 months later, they released a huge patch that finally added search functionality to
yeah.
it. You could search by word, you could search by most played, most popular, things in my mind that are inexcusable to leave out. Like, in the age of Google and YouTube, you have to have a search functionality.
Yeah, I think I'm on the side of the publishers here on this one, though. There's something about releasing the game to thousands, millions of players
uh-huh.
who are going to try their very best to break every part of that game that you built.
Uh-huh.
So when people log on and go, oh man, there's millions of, or you know, thousands of Little Big Planet levels that people created, and I can't search for the one I want.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't realize it, you know? Maybe they didn't know it ahead of time.
Ugh, I have a hard time believing that anyone that is alive in this day and age wouldn't understand why search functionality would be important.
Yeah.
I just think that they didn't have time to do it, and they wanted to get it out by a certain date,
right.
and it just got pushed.
But I think it's kind of cool at the very least to say, at this point now, it's easier for publishers and developers to listen to their fan base. When people cry, we need a better search function, they can say, okay, we'll get on that.
Rather than having to like wait till part two, you know, the
right.
second game to
do it. And now it's really kind of funny because it's one of those screwed if you do, screwed if you don't situations.
Yeah.
Because we can expect patches to be coming out uh-huh. fairly regularly for games, people are going to be pissed if a patch doesn't come soon enough.
Yeah.
And so Little Big Planet patch was probably coming before people even started complaining about
probably.
It.
Probably, yeah.
You know, where do you say, just wait a couple weeks, wait a couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, Silcom 2, same thing. I'm sure they had the patch planned.
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, it'd be foolish to think that they didn't know that it had problems.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we have two big reasons why games might be patched. One is that there's a certain functionality that just is not working. It's either broken or missing or just unacceptable for people. And the second is adding to and changing the game for a gameplay reason or an artistic reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of like the Team Fortress 2 WoW type thing, because you don't add a Death Knight because the game is broken. You add a Death Knight because, well, you think it'd be a fun thing to do. Add a Death Knight. Right. It would reinvigorate the game.
Right.
And I feel better about those types of patches because I like craftsmanship. I'm one of those people that when a game gets delayed, I'm never really that disappointed because I'd rather have a game delayed than not ship at its peak.
Yeah.
You know?
And there are those examples of utter train wrecks. Like Warhammer Online, they had to cut like two major cities and
yeah.
like four some races.
Classes and stuff.
Yeah, the classes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of content that they had to cut.
I wish they would have rather just
waited a year.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Or something like maybe Mirror's Edge when they were, you know, monkeying with whether or not to have guns or, you know, how to handle Faith's jumps off of, you know, blind ramps or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it feels like, you know, I would have just rather had them take more time than something like that.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
I think what is interesting is what we were talking a little bit about earlier as well, the idea that these patches make essentially completely different games.
Yeah.
Because it's becomes difficult to even talk about them in that case.
Yeah.
For example, when Little Big Planet hits and you see all of the news media jumping on getting their reviews out, is it even going to be that good of a review or going to be that useful of a review in a month, 2 months' time when patches are fixing the problems you're complaining about?
Exactly.
They're not going to fucking re-release a review. They're not going to review Little Big Planet every month because new content's coming out for it.
I mean, the old-style media won't, but I mean, maybe now that the way games are being talked about in the community with folks that are running their own blogs, folks that aren't beholden to the old media style rules of, you know, getting something out every month, making sure you have advertisers on board. Yeah. You know, you actually could, you know, divesting from a score, you actually could do an ongoing review of a game if it's one of those games that can that is so dynamic that it will change over time.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see that, especially with Little Big Planet, within the community groups that they have, of people who are scrounging up new and interesting Little Big Planet titles.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, it's just kind of weird. I mean, look at something like Burnout Paradise, where their downloadable content was essentially free, a large majority of it. Mm. But, you know, new cars and motorcycles was a big addition. What if you don't really like playing with motorcycles? The game could get significantly worse.
Yeah.
You know, where you don't like, I don't know, various other effects. Maybe Burnout Paradise is a bad example.
I think that's not a bad example because, you know, that speaks to whether or not these patches, even if they're free and even if they're supposedly supposed to improve the game, whether or not they should be mandatory. So, like, what if you bought Burnout and were like, wow, I love this game the way it is right now. And all of a sudden you wake up and there's motorcycles in your streets. It's like, whoa, this is not the game I paid for, you know? Like, what is happening here? So should patches be mandatory?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say so. When you buy a game, you're buying it from the developers and you're trusting that they're going to make good content, you know? You could stop. I mean, people could also backwards roll a patch. Like, there have been patches in WoW before where they'll fix a certain aspect ahead of time for, say, a class like the Paladin. And then all of a sudden, the Paladin will be really good. And so the very next patch, they'll roll back that you know, information. I don't know. But that's the weird thing. It's a good and a bad because we're saying that they can keep pace with what we want from games. But at the same time, they're changing the games while we play them. That's just a weird to think about. And it hasn't been that big of a problem with the games that I've been playing.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty weird.
And it's only going to get... it's only going to be a bigger issue in the future. I mean, this could never have happened back in the old cartridge days, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't have internet connections that could handle it, and we didn't have media that could handle it. We didn't have hard drives that could be, you know, that could hold these things. But the reason why I bring up mandatory versus optional changes and patches in games is that it strikes close to home with another medium, film, which this has happened in film. George Lucas re-releasing the Star Wars trilogy and adding things to it. I consider that a patch.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And not necessarily a good patch.
Oh no, Han shot first.
Thank you. Yes, I have the shirt.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm always a little bit wary of mandatory patches. Because, you know, once you put a piece of art out there in the ether, how much control does the original creator have over it?
That's a good point.
You know?
Like, look at something like Fable 2, right? Mm-hmm. If Peter Molyneux, or you've got one of the figureheads, the ones that everybody knows about, you know, like Miyamoto or something, mm-hmm. working on a game that is really coming from their heart and who they are, a lot of times I think that they'll probably, studios in general, and maybe I'm wrong about this, correct me if you know better, but they're probably just going to relegate the downloadable content to other teams.
Mm.
And I've heard of, you know, already games that have been doing that before in interviews and whatnot.
I guess it depends on how auteur focused the studio is. You know, if you have someone like Kojima, I have a feeling that he's pretty heavily involved, at least giving the yay or nay, you know, with every piece of content that goes into his game.
Right.
But then, like, it's also dangerous because if you get an auteur like George Lucas, he'll start monkeying with something that's actually pretty good and he'll make it worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
Well, the Star Wars example's a little more strange because he did it so many years later.
Yeah.
And he was, I don't know how many years, over 20?
Yeah, it was about 20, I guess.
And he said that this is how the film was, should have been. This is how he really wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And he's fixing his mistakes. And there's two problems with that. One is he's probably full of shit. George Lucas just wants to re-release Star Wars because he wants to make more money. and, you know, have all of his guards on Lucas Reigns dress up in stormtrooper outfits.
Well, not all of his guards have lightsabers yet. Those don't grow on trees. except in Dagobah.
Exactly. and then the other problem is, at what point do you say this game no longer belongs to the author and it belongs to the gamers? Mm-hmm. Star Wars is not owned by George Lucas.
Yeah.
I think you could go to Star Wars conventions and everybody knows this is something that has grown to some cultural enormity that is just a behemoth of bizarre cultural rituals that I think is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, so plus you got the expanded universe, and I mean, like, how would he
and
have
ghost
known?
Authors and you know, writing novels within the series. There's no point, and people argue all the time about what is canon.
Exactly.
And canon is not something that George Lucas just decides upon.
Yeah.
If he decides one day that says, oh no, you know, Luke Skywalker is actually a girl, little do you know. You know, people aren't going to take that lightly, and they're not going to take it seriously, even though he's the one who created it.
Yeah, sure. And that's why it's always a little weird when they change something. Like, you're playing Chrono Trigger right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's major changes in the dialogue in Chrono Trigger. The opening sequence of Chrono Trigger used to be Chrono, wake up, Chrono, when his mom's waking him up.
Uh-huh.
And that's not in the DS version.
Huh.
And that was a famous line from Chrono Trigger because it was the first line. People had shirts that said Wake Up Chrono on it.
That's weird.
And it's just kind of odd because I felt like that was part of the game. And now they re-released it, which I consider it, again, basically it's a port. But I mean, they patched certain things about it.
You were telling me, too, that they changed Frog's dialogue.
Yeah, he used to speak in a quasi-Shakespearean, you know, lots of these and thous.
Yeah.
And it was kind of silly, but... You know, it was also kind of silly to see, like, the rubber aliens in Star Wars. And now when they replaced it with CG aliens, it seems kind of weird, you know?
I mean, and that's weird stuff, too, the Chrono Trigger examples.
Yeah.
Because that's narrative stuff. That's not really... That has nothing to do with mechanics. It has to do with even the art of translating to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a Japanese title originally, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there should be a statute of limitations. Like, don't touch this game if it's been released for more than 5 years, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but then, you know, we never come to any good conclusions here because then we'll think of something like this, like Bionic Commando Rearmed when they just refresh it.
Yeah. Or Mega Man.
Or Mega Man. Well, I mean, like Mega Man 9 is brand new, but, you know, when they do updates of games, because that's kind of cool. And sometimes it is nice to see a reimagining of something, even if it is slightly changed. And so you don't want to chill. You don't want to chill people's historical fascination, and if they think they can do something new and different, or if they think they want to correct something that wasn't originally in their vision, you know, they should have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that we as the gamers should have a choice. Like, you better believe I'm keeping my old VHS Star Wars trilogy.
Because you can't get the old copies either.
I think they re-released it.
Did they?
Yeah, I think they also...
I thought George Lucas said he lost it or some bullshit.
No, he was lying. Okay. I'm pretty sure... So, for me, it always comes down to choice. If I had a choice to patch Pixel Junk or not, I'd be a little bit less worried about it. If I had a choice whether to accept the re-releases or, you know, pick which patches I want, I'd be a little bit more comfortable with it.
It's funny because I didn't think we'd get to it, but this is a lot having to do with just... how we see the medium in general anyway.
Yeah.
If you wanted to see video games as really artistic, I mean, even if you already in art, there's a lot of complications.
Yeah.
When people go back and fix things in their novels, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've recently read another Orson Scott Card novel that's set in the Ender's universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been the introduction or the epilogue, but he was talking about corrections that he made and continuity things that he fixed.
Oh.
And he's going back and reprinting future issues of Ender's Game.
Wow.
Which is a book that came out, I've been thinking, like 85 or something.
So it'd be hard to track down an original 1985 copy. And if you can't track it down, you wouldn't be seeing the original work.
Right. And that's not new by any means. People do that
and change things all the time.
Usually it's minor corrections. But again, it just kind of falls into that weird realm of who it belongs to.
Well, it would be
to.
The difference between, like, in Chrono Trigger, if they left a period or a comma off of a sentence, and if they changed Frog's dialogue.
Because
every once in a while, an author, you know, you'll read something, and the editor will say that the only changes I've made to this are grammatical or punctuation errors or something. Like, if there's a quote that's misquoted or something.
The weird thing about the video game patching issue is that it's something that, especially now, is repetitive. So the longer a game is out, you're going to keep getting
more patches. Yeah.
I mean, like, World of Warcraft and MMOs are the greatest example.
Like, how would you define the... How would you arrive at the definitive snapshot of World of Warcraft, where would you take it? Could you take it? Maybe I don't think even you not. Could. Yeah.
Because even now they released patches that changes how quickly you level in earlier areas. And the quest rewards have changed. Mm-hmm. And then also, because there's not all those people doing that low-end content, you're very unlikely to go get a pickup group for an early instance.
Yeah.
So one of the earlier instances, say, for example, it's prime spot to go in there with a group of five between three levels. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's easier for you to level past those three levels, and it's hard to find enough people to go who want to do that instance, mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't going to see that content.
Yeah, you'll be experiencing something different than your friend who starts now.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even beyond that, all of a sudden you can, you know, solo elites. And maybe it ruins the tension of it.
Yeah.
The fact that these patches can come continually makes a game never permanent.
Yeah.
And that's
always fluid. At
and
least.
That's something that might be pretty bad, actually, if we wanted to look at video games. I don't know, maybe not. Because, like you said, film does a similar thing, but it's just mm-hmm. to have something that we talk about so regularly not be something that's actually solid or
something
know,
that could actually change. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And it's something we don't think about a lot.
I mean, imagine if all of the books on our bookshelves, like little passages were changing every few weeks.
Yeah, when we wake up and it's like, oh, look, my book went through a patch last night. Yeah. That'd be kind of crazy. But we accept it all the time with video games.
Yeah.
Oh, I think weird. I think now I'm paranoid. I'm going to be looking at my PlayStation 3 before I go to bed tonight.
Well,
like,
you know,
don't
what?
You change.
Seriously. If anything, it's a sign that, like, let us know the patch notes. Blizzard's really great about letting people know the patch notes way ahead of time.
Transparency and information is probably the best, you know, the best way to resolve all of these things that we're talking
all
about.
All world problems, really.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, as long as you can be transparent about what's going on, I think that's the best we could hope for here.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a pretty good conversation. I didn't really expect it to go in such a meta artistic way.
High-minded.
But I guess we're just those kind of guys, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go to your house and move your furniture and just see if it weighs you out a little.
just by an inch.
Just by an inch.
Man, my house got patched last night.
Dude, that'd be sweet, actually. I'd give you someone to fix my sink.
All right. Well, if you guys want to jump in on the conversation, feel free to shoot us an email, experiencepoints@gmail.com.
Uh-huh. And be sure to visit, if you haven't already and your friend is having you listen to this, our website, which is experiencepoints.blogspot.com. We update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings, so we're pretty consistent.
Yeah, and feel free to leave comments on any of our posts. Follow us up on Twitter. And like I said, we love those emails coming in. So until next time, have fun.
Happy 2009.